London is there for the taking. A rich city. Food, women, gold. My men have come a long way for this. I see we take London now.
Could be London next.
Oh, no. All around London.
Not now. They're taking it away from you. And I'm getting out.
You ain't going nowhere.
This is the Mild Mannered Podcast. This is Mild Mannered photographer Alex Hurdy. Here with two new people on the podcast. I'm in London right now, so we have Matt, who is
hi.
Yes, Matt just waved on the podcast.
Yes, in case you can't see me, I'm very audio and all head actions.
Yeah, and also have Vass.
Hi.
Yeah, who's actually from London because Matt's just sort of the student, but Vass is one of our new British friends, and he's also a pretty big comic geek. Don't worry. Okay. Yeah, we have a couple of the people in the room, but
come sit down.
Yeah, come and relax.
You'll have
nothing to say, Joe.
But yeah, we're here to. It's been a while since we've had some we've had a podcast. It's been a while because of this all this tough stuff.
Yeah.
But so we're just gonna quickly go through kind of things that have come out through the week. We've actually missed like 3 weeks of comics since the last one, so. If you have anything interesting that you see on the list that you want to just sort of talk about, like, the last volume of Thor came out, which is, that's sort of the end, the J. Michael Straczynski run on Thor, which was really good, which is kind of sad, but it's the end of that line, and then there's also Young Liars by David Lapham. Also, Thor is the hardcover, so you might want to wait for the trade, but this is $20 from Marvel. Young Liar is a little cheaper. That's $15 from DC Comics.
You guys are lucky with dollar.
Yeah, I know. How much
am I paying for a hardcover? Like, it was 19 quid for the Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. Which Neil Gaiman did you get?
The most recent thing that he did.
Was it the Batman?
No, movie? The Marvel 1602.
1602, yes.
Yeah, which was phenomenally good.
So you like that? We actually reviewed. No, we didn't actually get him to review that. So maybe we'll have to talk about that sometime. But that was like where he said all the Marvel characters back in
Elizabethan England.
Yeah. They actually just came out with the Spider-Man version of that as well.
Yeah, but it's not Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, but I do like Spider-Man, and it looks kind of funny. He has like this like the frills like around his neck.
Well, he appears as a minor character in the Neil Gaiman's
Such a fucking cock tease with Spider-Man there. It was just like, when is he gonna get his fucking power? You guys, I feel so awkward. You guys are just watching us now. It was much more comfortable when you guys were just still playing poker. It's just like, oh, they're busy. There are six people now in the room. It was pretty funny. But what else? You got also something, you know, Warren Ellis again, No Hero, hardcover. Let's just go on to the next week. Losers from Andy Diggle is kind of cool because he's kind of becoming actually the Forbidden Planet soon to actually have a signing, which I'm looking forward to. Andy Diggle's also doing the Thunderbolts writing for that now as well.
And also Daredevil.
Daredevil. I'm just going to turn this into three so we can hear everyone in the room. Just so you're not just commenting from the back and you've not heard at all. But yes, you just said he also writes for Daredevil as well. Have you been reading his Daredevil writing?
I'm waiting for the first trade to come out because it looks really good. The main plot that Brubaker just left Daredevil with is that Daredevil is now in charge of the Hand. And it's a pretty interesting twist on it.
That was originally run by Elektra?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, a bunch of different ones, but yeah, Elektra, I think, was the most recent, and I think it's a really interesting take, so I'm waiting for the trade to come out before I...
That does sound pretty cool. And also, I know the Alias trade paperback book 2, it's the Ultimate Collection. I kind of I picked up the first trade because I found it, like, it was an interesting idea, like, from Bendis. It's one of his earlier writings. About, like, Jessica Drew, who's just this private eye who used to be a superhero.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, and it's great. The first trade, the first Ultimate Collection, it's all about her finding out, like, Captain America's real identity.
That's Luke Cage's wife?
Yeah, Luke Cage's wife, currently. That's basically, like, back then, like, but Luke Cage's appearance really funny. Like, she actually kind of has sex with Luke Cage for the first time in, like, in this comic.
Interesting.
And it's just like, she kind of gets pissed off at him during most of it. It's very funny. Yeah, if you definitely like that, pick up the first trade and then pick up this. It's kind of expensive, though. It is $35. Not sure how much that would be in pounds, but it's not bad. Definitely worth it. It is like, you get 15 comics in it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's like, yeah. I like it's the good deal comics, which I like.
Definitely.
You got Batman Under the Cowl as well, which I think that's a couple of interesting writers working on this one. Letting that load up. It's Bill Willingham, who also does Fables, and Grant Morrison, Jeff Johns, and Chuck Dixon, and others.
That sounds like a really good collection.
Yeah, well, sort of like
Grant Morrison, definitely.
Yeah,
and Jeff Johns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely Chuck Dixon, who also did, I think, Robin Year One as well.
Oh,
we reviewed that a while ago on the podcast. It's definitely an interesting series. Spoiler alert. Yeah, fine, thanks a lot. Bruce Wayne's Batman, guys. Yeah, way to spoil everything.
Oh, man.
Some of us were waiting to find out.
It doesn't matter. I was saying the same things out loud.
Yeah, no, don't worry.
I'm like,
do you remember the Big Bang Theory argument that the guy who was right in that argument? Because it comes out before we find out who becomes Batman, whether it's the...
Well, spoiler alert.
But like, basically, Final Crisis, that was a while ago, and the trade has come out already, so...
Because I can't remember what they're arguing.
Batman wasn't killed.
Yeah, I know, but
he was sent back in time, and then it was.
But someone did take over.
Can I say who took over?
Who did take over? Actually, I'm kind of curious.
Dick Grayson took over. Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was kind of funny though.
Who was right? Was it?
I don't remember which one.
What episode was this on Big Bang Theory where they're having this discussion?
It
I can't remember.
It was a while ago. It was probably a few months ago.
It's the latest series.
But you guys get things. No, it's not latest series
because I've been watching the latest series online. It's series two.
Fine.
I've been following Batman and Robin also. Yeah. Grant Morrison's still going on. So
yeah, you also have Tinkerer, the remastered edition, which is volume 5 as well, that just came out.
Have they done with the remastered edition? Is it worth getting it?
I think it's just sort of...
As in, have they recolored it?
Maybe they have recolored it, I'm not sure. Like, you don't get much here, but... It's definitely, if you want to, I think it's definitely just giving people a chance to kind of get back into Tank Girl or start reading it.
I would recommend it.
I love how spoiled
you have to work. We're trying hard not to spoil them.
What, you're just going to spoil, you're going to say Tank Girl isn't a girl? Is that what you're going to tell us?
Actually, he was going to say Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
No. Oh, damn it!
Fucking hell.
Such a lead up to that. So the whole like arc too. Who is Spider-Man? Okay,
I
and also
for the new movie to come out.
I know.
To find out.
Yeah. I swear to God, if in the new movie it ends up being what's his name?
Yeah, we actually haven't discussed this yet. Because
if Michael Cera gets picked as Spider-Man, I will not.
First of all, they're not.
If we're doing a college Spider-Man, teenager-esque, why not?
He's not good.
Have you seen him in Juno?
How could you hate Juno?
He's the awkward teen every single movie.
He has the one character.
Right, first of all,
I'm not arguing that, but he's very good at that character. And Peter Parker is that character.
But he's not heroic. I can't see him.
But first of all, what they would want to do, I think the smart thing, is to go with an unknown young actor that they can actually keep using in more movies without having to pay like thousands of dollars each time.
That's why they fired.
They need a big name.
I was very excited to see the Lizard.
Yeah,
they were building up to the Lizard every freaking movie, And now, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
freaking.
No, it's okay. We're already a mature podcast. It's
fine. Really disappointed because I was really looking forward to the Lizard. One of my favorite characters.
I was looking forward to Axel Malkovich as a Vulture.
That was that's an awesome combination. I have never thought of that.
No, it was
that's who they had.
It was really
that's part of why Marvel didn't want the Vulture as a main villain. They wanted I don't remember why exactly, but I know they wanted to bring Venom back.
As long as they just picked a different actor,
well,
because Venom, I hated Venom in like the.
They messed him up.
Yeah, they did. He was horrible.
More of a bigger guy, better. He's a good actor. But yeah, that's why
maybe
Sam Raimi's
if
gone.
If they actually go with the Scorpion and actually make him like, if they kind of use this, like include,
I would
like,
have liked
go with Matt Gargan as the Venom because that's sort of what they've been doing now recently. And
although he's just fucking nuts.
Which is great, though. Don't worry, you can curse. It's okay. Fuck, shit, cunt, asshole. It doesn't matter. Also, other things that came out. Now we're on to the week of February 3rd. Things that came out this week is actually Fables, Volume 13, the great Fables crossover, which is something I've been looking forward to. It's actually all eight issues like kind of this long crossover, which took a while, but it included just Jack of Fables 33 to 35, and Fables 83 to 85, and also the Literals 1 through 3. And it's kind of interesting. It's like sort of just this. It's a lot of things that you don't learn about just by reading Fables. You have to sort of also read Jack of Fables, so I was a little lost in some of it, but I did like it. I mean, this is definitely my pick of the week.
Is your podcast only trades?
Only trades. It's sort of, I mean, like, if you have read the whole, if you've read nothing but single issues, but of a whole arc, feel free then.
I mean, Blackest Night's not done yet, so.
It isn't? I thought it was just finished.
Two more.
But yeah, is it going well? I mean, you can.
I like it a lot.
Really?
I'm a big Geoff Johns fan. Geoff Johns actually just had a Smallville episode, what's today, Saturday? Or technically it's Sunday, but air on Friday night, so I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing it because every episode that Geoff Johns has written has been pretty good. So
yeah.
He's one of my favorite writers. It's not like Grant Morrison where there's lots of twists and stuff, but
it's just sort of solid.
Very good superhero comic.
Have you actually, speaking of Geoff Johns, another great release for the week that's kind of rare for DC because it's in trade paperback, is Green Lantern Secret Origin. And this is the Secret Origin of Green Lantern written by Geoff Johns, and it's art by Ivan Reis and Eau Claire Albert. And it's $15 for this, and it seemed like I actually was reading a lot of it, and it was one of a great, like, kind of just, if you want to find out what the hell happened to the original Green Lantern, Hal Jordan.
I actually was getting that in the single issue, and this is one of the reasons why I love Geoff Johns, is because in his entire build-up in Green Lantern, since he started with Green Lantern Rebirth, it's all been building up to Blackest Night right now.
Yeah.
So,
it's kind of fun. He mentions a lot of stuff.
Like,
he kind of goes back, retcons it.
He definitely retconned it, and it very much is important to what's going on right now.
It's sort of, I guess to explain to kind of listeners, it's sort of like in a movie where you kind of, they show, like, you know, you kind of watch the movie and it's just like, well, you obviously forgot about this part, and they kind of include like something that wasn't really in there at the beginning, but it's like, fine, fair, if you want to kind of play it that way, I'll just pay attention.
Mm-hmm. And just one more thing before we get off of Geoff Johns, there's a new he's been given a new project as it's going to be released only in trades. It's Batman Earth 1. It's going to be released only in trades, and I can't remember who the artist is.
And just so people like Earth One, as in basically the multiple Earths. This is the first Earth.
How Marvel does Ultimate, it's probably going to be similar to that, although I think more mature. The artwork looks great. And
who's the artist working on it? Do you know?
Offhand, I don't. We'd have to look it up.
Okay.
But it looks great. And someone's also doing Superman Earth One, and I'm not positive who it is. It's not Geoff Johns, but also.
But that's cool. So it's only trades, though.
Only trades.
That is nice.
How many trades are they expecting to do?
I think Geoff Johns is planning on doing a lot.
Because I gotta say, the annoying thing about Geoff Johns is, like, I think a lot of the famous writers is that they have so much fucking work, like, writing to do that they're sort of, they get kind of lost, they forget to do some series and you don't hear back from that series for a while.
I think that's why he's doing it in trades, though, just so that he will have time to do it. And I think it's going
to
be good.
I think it's nice. Like, you know, you kind of, you don't have to kind of, for, as someone like me, you don't have to kind of wait and hear from other people. She's like, oh, I like this series so far. It's like, I get to pick it up and trade without having to wait, you know.
I mostly read everything that I do.
I have no patience.
Which is why you're perfect for this podcast, because this this is a podcast made for trade waiters. We're just talking about the trades coming out. Because, I mean, I used to read everything in single issues, like you, Aaron. But, I mean, it was just so expensive. I stopped after, like, I had to basically get $250 to get the rest of my box from the comic book store. That was like, okay. Single, like, trades
only.
That's
why I've only been, like, I've limited. That's why I don't even get Spider-Man anymore, because it's so hard to get it as a single issue, because
it's coming.
Times
yeah.
Long.
It's actually
so
kind of nice, because you can get the trades are so much, they come out so much now that it's like, and it's nice.
I can't keep up with it with my cash flow. So I've, unfortunately, because I am a big Marvel fan, I've only been getting DC, I've been getting Batman and Robin and anything to do with Pakistan.
This is the Batman and Robin by
Grant Morrison.
Yeah, okay.
No, I don't like Tommy Daniels' run so far, so I haven't been getting it.
Yeah, okay. So that was, I think, that. Is there any, let's see if there's anything else coming out this week that was. No, nothing crazy. A lot of just anime, and then there's also manga, I mean. Then there's also some Iron Man and Armor Wars.
Who's excited for the second Iron
Man? Oh, wait. Yeah, that is good. But also Deadpool Volume 3 hardcover, X Marks the Spot, which I got as well. Because I fucking love Deadpool. Especially Deadpool by Daniel Way.
I'm telling you, you gotta. At least two of the volumes are out in trade.
They actually have a lot of the old time, but they have like a lot of Joe Kelly.
This is what you're saying, the first.
Joe Kelly, yes. Two of them. I really will.
There are some great moments, though, in the new Deadpool. I have all the hardcovers here with me, actually, so you should try reading them. Now that you like Deadpool, it is hilarious. Like, have you even read Daniel Way, right, Vass?
Yeah.
What do you think? Like, what do you think of like the hardcovers, like the trade so far?
Yeah,
Deadpool?
They've been really, really good. As I said, I was telling you before, I honestly think Deadpool is one of the greatest comic book characters.
He's my favorite.
Just because being able to break the fourth wall makes you such a different character to any other comic book.
And it's great because also, like, I'm not sure how like he was being written originally, but he's crazy in this as
well.
Well, like,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I think the major difference, and probably the reason I actually like Joe Kelly's run better, mm-hmm. is because he's not portrayed quite as crazy. He's the merc with a mouth, so he doesn't stop talking.
Yeah,
it's not quite insane. Like in this, you've got the two boxes of different thoughts. You don't have that in that. It's mostly him saying really funny jokes at the most inappropriate times and breaking the fourth wall, but he's not quite crazy in that. And also, Joe Kelly's run is very... It's a lot deeper than you think with a Deadpool comic, because, I mean, I'm not going to give anything away, but it's a lot to do. It's a build-up to him having to save the world and whether he will or not.
Really?
That sounds very good.
I'll definitely give it. Okay.
Is the art 80s or is it...
I like the art. It changes. Actually, the first couple arcs is Frank Cho. So very cartoony.
Okay.
I think Deadpool works like that.
That's why it's perfect.
And then for those who don't like the cartoony, as it went on, it got a little more muscular. So you really see him as like a...
So it's more of the Rob Liefeld...
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of funny. Actually, the first volume, they make a Rob Liefeld joke, actually. And that's sort of why... Like, that's how meta gets. They're like, you know, now. But that also came out as well. And another thing that looked interesting from Howard Chaykin, like, I can't remember where I've heard of him before.
He's an artist. He was on Wolverine a few, maybe a year ago.
Okay.
Big fan.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just, there's this series called Dominic Fortune, It Can Happen Here and Now, that just came out in trade. And it's sort of like, it seems like it's in the 20s or something. And it's sort of it's very old-fashioned looking, but it seems kind of interesting. But it's $20 and it's in trade, so I don't know. I'll check it out, read it sometime soon. But that's also the other interesting thing. But everything else, we've talked about it. But yeah, that's all for the week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Alex Erdy here again, live on the scene of the 45 signing here in Forbidden Planet, and I'm talking with the owner and founder of
I'm the
comics.
Owner and founder, yeah, one of the co-owners. My business partner's Benjamin Cherubani's in Venice Beach, probably checking out the waves and the sun and the women, but I'm the one stuck in England.
Yeah. Mr. Erdy,
Dayton.
Yes. And so... how do you actually go about finding like a comic company? Is it sort of a, you know, obviously it's like we should just start writing comics and get people to work for us?
No, the kind of history of comics is quite a long, convoluted one. I think it's best summarized on Wikipedia if you check that out.
Yeah. How do you spell comics actually? Just for the listeners.
COM.X.
Okay, there we go. I just wanted to make sure people knew that because. It's got, you know, even comics, you know.
Yeah, it's got a nice ring to it, but you've got to usually spell it out to someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, it's a real kind of, it started off as a real passion, still is a passion, which is why we're still around today. We've been through a number of kind of changes in the company's evolved, but we're still really, really passionate about publishing comics and publishing really unique content and stuff that the reader's going to dig. So.
Yeah. So do you have anything coming up in the pipeline soon as well? Like you just kind of released 45. What do you have coming up that we should look forward?
Oh, we've got tons of good stuff coming up. We've got a couple of one-shots from 45, which we're developing at the moment, and I'm co-writing one of them with Andy. That's Bruce Spear, which is one of the really cool characters. In 45. We've got W78, which is coming up end of the year, and we've got Nicodemus Flynn. We've also got a title called Monster Myths and Blood Will Have Blood. So we've got some really cool stuff, and they're all kind of very unique. They're not the usual kind of comic fare. So we're trying to give it the comics polish,
yeah.
And the comics touch.
See, you guys. It's just single. Do you guys do trades? Like these are all like most of what I saw on the table were trades. So do you
That's
guys
right.
mean release trades or?
Yeah, it's we probably call them original graphic novels. They're all one shots. Mainly because it's more cost effective for us to publish those kind of things.
And it's cost effective for people like us to buy them as well. It's
definitely,
great.
Definitely. And you'll find that they've got longer shelf life as well. So, you know, it's not a monthly that comes out and it's off the shelf. The week later in the bargain bin, it's there. And usually they're there for a good 2 or 3 months if you can get hold of the books, that is.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking to me, Eddie, and enjoy the pub.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, what's the website name?
It's www.comxcomics.com.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'm here with Andy. You have a comic that was just released recently?
Yeah, that's right. It just had 45 released, which has been produced, published by ComX. And we're here at Forbidden Planet London with 13 of the artists. For a big sort of get together and signing, which is going very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, so far we've sort of it's already like about 7. Got here about five o'clock, and it was interesting to see a humongous crowd coming in, and it's been nonstop actually. And this is a very interesting comic actually. You just did say that you have 13 artists working on this all together, and I thought this was a really interesting premise when I first heard about it. What was it like, kind of getting all this talent together, to kind of work on this story, together? I mean, you are the writer for this, the main writer. So.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was. It was certainly a challenge. I had plenty of time. We didn't really set ourselves a deadline, and ComX were really sort of excellent in sort of pushing me towards guys like John Higgins and Liam Sharp and Sean Phillips. And once I approached them, they really pushed the idea that they were just doing one single page. They were straight on board, and really with that sort of nucleus behind you, it was really easy to approach other artists and say, you know, look, John's involved, Liam's involved. And quite quickly, it sort of snowballed. You know, Jock was on board. He suggested people like Don Reardon and Lee Garbett, and it just snowballed from there, really.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because this whole event has sort of been a kind of a nice little get together, like for friendly artists. You know, everyone knows each other, you know, or has like wanted to meet each other, and I think it's been a very nice, friendly atmosphere actually. After all this work together, you can see.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's great because some of the guys I haven't sort of met in a proper capacity. You know, it's just been sort of several emails. But now it's, you know, we have drinks afterwards, so it's going to be a bit messy, no doubt. But no, it's been great, and all the guys are, you know, hats off to them. They're very. You know, there are talented bunch of individuals.
Yeah. So when you were writing the story originally, what kind of through the process? I mean, did it change at all, or has it been sort of the same story? like it was when you first thought of it?
It always was the story that I sort of originated. Basically, it was during my wife's 12-week scan that I came upon the idea of the question of what if a child was born with superpowers, you know, how would you deal with that? And really, it was between that and the birth of my son, during that period, that was when I was actually hard at work writing. I actually finished it 4 hours after my son's birth. So the final scenes are, I would say, emotion-filled.
That's great. I mean, you can't ask for a better kind of motivation than, like, you know, you're kind of going through all these emotions all at once while writing this. I mean, it's definitely, did you kind of begin writing this without the sort of general premise at first of having, including all the artists, or was this sort of
the artists was something that Comic suggested after I pitched the idea to them. And once I had all the interviews written out, it was really Eddie Dayton that turned around and said, you know, this would be great if you just got one artist on the page. And I've got a graphic design background along with Eddie at his other company, Annie's. And for me, I actually love art, so 45 pieces of art was just like, yeah, that's the, you know, that was like winning the lottery, really. It was just one of those fantastic things to happen.
Were you surprised at all with any kind of the artists? Like, did you have any geek out moments where it was just like, oh my god, we got this artist to work on it with us?
There was always geek out moments. Dan Boltwood, who just walked past me and gave me a little, with a little gin sign.
That's my Christian name.
Sorry, Jim. I would say that I'm not a true comic fan at the time.
Yeah.
My background wasn't comics, it was more fantasy, I was more into Lord of the Rings. And it was really Eddie that sort of educated me towards sort of comics and understanding and sort of really appreciating them, because I actually sort of dropped them after my sort of teenage years. But now, you know, I totally geek out because it's like John Higgins, Watchmen, John Higgins, Razorjack. You know, just looking at it going, that's bloody marvellous. And you've got like Trevor Hairside, and you really get to appreciate these guys and you know, seeing the art and the sketches come in was kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's like, it's definitely got to be fun, like, fun to sort of be like at the beginning of this whole creative process, putting the comic together. And you said, you know, you work with the, you know, you normally design, so
I'm used to sort of dealing with one or two people, but 45 was, yeah, that was a marathon. But it was an enjoyable one. You know, you finish it at the end, you think, you know, I did it.
Yeah, so this event definitely has got to be one of those kind of great feelings you get, where you sort of see everyone who want to really read the comic now kind of coming in to talk to you about it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like I say, it compares with the day my son was born. You know, not that I want to sort of belittle that.
No, but this is
because I've been wanting to write and get published since the age of about 8 to 10.
Yeah, everyone's coming here to see, you know, your literary baby.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is one of those moments that I'm always having.
Maybe it's more like introducing your baby to the rest of the family.
Yeah, I think so. And it'd be great once Zach's a little bit older to understand, you know, I did this not only for myself but for him as well.
Yeah, that's going to be a very cool thing. It's like, this was written right before I was born.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, he's in it. So, you know, that I can't ask for anything else, but hopefully he's not going to look at it as some sort of embarrassment. But he goes, you know what, that's bloody cool.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking to me in the podcast, and I'd love to have you on later on, you know, live episode with us. But I guess thank you so much. Would you like to say anything else?
No, really just appreciate your time and everybody that's interested in it. Fantastic, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much, Andy.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Now, just to kind of go over what have we been reading? I've read a lot. I have a couple things that I've read so far, but I know that I've tossed over one comic that I kind of picked up randomly, Sea Guy from Grant Morrison, to Matt, and also Aaron read it as well, and Aaron has a lot of complaints about it. Aaron
is that a he did Sea Guy a while ago too? So is that new?
This is the first one, I think. And now, like, now they have new Sea Guy, like, new issues of Sea Guy coming out, which is what I thought this was.
I like Grant Morrison. I do. Just like, you read Final Crisis?
I read most of it. I never got to read the last
confusing.
One.
Confusing. Like, he gets very confusing.
He loves confusing
this one,
shit.
This one's very funny. makes no sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't read the whole
you
thing.
You read the
but
first
from
beginning.
The first few pages, it's utterly surreal. Like, it's
yes,
Dada-esque. Like, makes
yes.
no sense.
Very
humor.
Well,
like,
I mean, the philosophy major over here is going to be...
Well, yeah. Well, that's why I like it. Like,
it's very surreal. It's very
It is this sort of... It definitely is a very kind of interesting conversation about, like, the superhero. Kind of like... Like, the superhero lives in this kind of perfect world where they do nothing but, like, fight, like, you know, kind of bad guys. But this is sort of... This is about a guy named C-Guy who lives in a world, like, of superheroes, but nothing's wrong. Everything is just perfect, or so it seems.
It's very interesting because I want to see the other issues now because...
Yeah, me too.
It seems like a very big world that he didn't have enough time to play in. I want to see him sort of expand that.
And it definitely is not... It's great because it works so well because it is this very small comic... And I actually got it for, like, £6, I think. Or, like, actually £3.
£3? Nice.
No, maybe six, actually. There's a David Lapham comic I got for £3, actually. I picked up a couple of comics this week. It was a successful week in cheap comics. But, yeah, that, yeah, so you get, well, yeah. Do you have anything more to say about it, Matt?
No, it's mostly just, it's very, against the real, and it wasn't fully... played out upon. I want to see him more.
Oh, yeah.
But
also,
if that's the first one, then that's how it's always.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
I want to see that
world see the rest
more.
Of the world,
it's a good taste, but I want to see, yeah.
Also, you also read Noir as well. You read Noir as well. I remember him.
Yes,
you want to talk about that? I know it's been a while since you read it, but...
It has been. I read it on the plane over here, so it's only been a couple of weeks, but there are some very interesting stories and very well-executed arcs in there that I was really impressed by. The,
It's like all these great kind of writers in general. They had a lot of like the guy that writes for Criminal, like Ed Brubaker, you know, Rucka, kind of the well-known spaz. Like it's crazy like that.
Yeah, it's definitely. I like the writing was excellent. I think the art was. They had a bunch of different artists there.
Yeah,
for each story, and I think it was a really bunch of my different takes on it. And, you know, obviously they're my personal favorites, but I think each one had their own merits to it. Each one sort of brought a different flavor to the story they were bringing.
There was a great one, like, that kind of, like, I'll just spoil it, but it was just sort of the opening to this job where, like, they're kind of just, he's asking for a good job to get, like, you know, he wants some, you know, and they're just talking about, like, this, yeah, there's this guy that wants, you know, to rob his wife, you know, just take her diamonds and just so he can collect on the insurance. Fucking turns out it's Batman's parents. It's basically in the point of view of the guy with the gun. Like, it's just
that's
like
amazing.
It's
amazing.
It's like such a great thing because that's the end. Like, he runs away and you see the kid like there, like, just don't touch the kid. And it's like,
that's phenomenal.
Yeah,
it is like one of those like holy shit. Like, it's a great, like, just for that it was worth it actually. And then there's so many other good stories, right?
And it was filled with just brutal stories like that. There was I'm pulling out the one where the girl is, like, kidnapped and is going to be raped.
Yes, David Lapham, like, this is, like, it starts off, like, the first, it's, like, girl in the box, and guys are arguing about, like, who's going to go first to rape her.
Yeah.
And it's from her point of view.
It's brilliantly done. It was brutal, it was visceral, and it was absolutely wonderful.
It's a great kind of, like...
the best way I can describe it.
That's, like,
really.
That is fucking tension right there. Like,
it was tension, as well done. I really enjoyed that story, because that really stuck out in my mind for whatever reason.
And I know we've already reviewed this on the podcast before, but I handed you off the first volume of
DMZ, which was incredible.
You're a fan of Brian Wood. You were a fan of Brian Wood,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so that's sort of why I thought
I hadn't really heard of DMZ before. Well, like, not properly
until I sort of...
that. But honestly, like, I think the idea... I think it's very... I don't know. As an English person, I think it's very brave for an American, like, writer to be able to do a storyline like that, like, in contemporary, like, now-ish America, but with kind of the Civil War going on. I think it's incredibly interesting that he feels he can get away with doing that.
Oh, dude, I mean, like, from someone, like, as being someone in America for a while, like, you think, like, that, like, that doesn't seem, like, that far off, like, kind of, like, the red states and the blue states fighting against each other, just guns just shooting each other. It is...
Yeah, I actually, I read that one as well.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes, because I left it in your... Right.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
I just picked it up and I read it. It was... There's things that I didn't like.
It is hard for some people. Like, don't blame me. Like,
it was necessarily that I didn't believe it. I very much got into the character of New York, though. I thought that was very well done.
Yeah, and that's something that you actually hear a lot about later on, like in other volumes. Like, one of my favorite parts of that, like the first volume, was just sort of how the basically the Bronx, like the Central Park Zoo, was just sort of actually like put underground by like these soldiers, and I think that's like such a great like kind of story to tell. Like,
but I mean, there's always I think the eco warriors idea is very relevant, like, because there's always going to be people trying to fight for ecological like whatever, and I think that little touch just makes it very believable,
very well executed.
And it's kind of funny because like second volume, he actually goes into a whole like kind of a guide in like current New York.
Oh wow!
And he's like talking about these like, you know, like hear back about all these things like
counter
how he went to like a like the wedding of his like this Chinese guy that lives in his apartment who has a daughter. Like, he went to their the wedding, and it's fun like fun things like that. I actually bought the I actually just picked up the third volume of it just this week, and I haven't had a chance to read it, but I look forward to it. Have you read anything else? Actually, I can talk about some more stuff while you.
I read web comics. I'm not a big guy.
We have another comic to talk. Another web comic to talk about soon. But I also I can talk about Atomic Robo Volume 3, which is just I've been looking forward to this for a while. I read Volumes 1 and 2 of Atomic Robo. It's one of my favorite new series. It's actually, as Matt pointed out, is actually written by Brian Clevenger, who I did not know this, but he actually wrote 8-Bit Theater, which is something I never knew about.
Who was close friends with Tim Buckley, who writes Control Delete. Kind of, anyone else knows that.
I'm not a big fan of DC and Marvel.
I try and like do a little of everything. I don't do everything well, but I just...
I mean, it's a good thing, because there are things that don't come out of Marvel and DC that are good.
It's all about the vertigo. All about the vertigo.
Vertigo is great.
I know, but I just mean personally. If something's on Vertigo, I'll probably go and read it.
The Vertigo. I think the reason
I'm yet to be disappointed.
There is the great thing with Vertigo because Vertigo, everything that comes out, the first volume of everything released from Vertigo that comes out is It's $10. It's $10.
Really? I didn't know that.
So
wow.
Most of them you can get like a PDF of the first, I think, issue or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
But this is Atomic Robo Volume 3. It starts off with just people that don't know, Atomic Robo is the creation of Tesla, who, you know, Tesla Coil. Nikola Tesla.
Who's the one who stole a bunch of stuff from Tesla? I can't remember his name right now. He's the one of the most famous scientists who considered the light bulb.
Yeah. But
Edison. Edison stole everything.
Yeah, actually, Edison is sort of like a villain sometimes in this. Edison's man, occasionally comes by.
Yeah, Edison's widely regarded as a villain.
But it's great, though, because it starts out with Atomic Robo basically working in the study while Nikola Tesla's away. And all of a sudden, basically, this one guy comes in along with H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft is just going crazy. He's just like, there's something in my head. And it turns out it's like this big tentacled monster.
I have to read that. If it has H.P. Lovecraft,
it's hilarious. But it's like,
he's one of my favorite.
Let me show you. This is H.P. Lovecraft.
It's absolutely wonderful. Is that what he looks like?
Yeah, that's what he looks like in the comic.
Everything. I wrote stories to prepare mankind.
It's great. Like, he's like, I was telling everyone about this. I'm trying to stop this. And it is like this crazy.
H.P. Lovecraft wrote Cthulhu.
The whole Cthulhu mythos.
And that basically, it's in this comic. So he's just trying to prepare people for it, which is hilarious.
Yeah, I love H.P.
And there's also a whole conversation in this book later on about making an evil computer. What counts as an evil computer?
Just because I can't really contribute to this, I just want to point out one more thing. That something to look out for in the coming months. Stephen King will be writing a new comic, like not one of the ones for his
The Gunslinger or the Dark Tower,
like one about the first American vampire.
Wow, that should be interesting.
That sounds good.
Do you know his artwork?
I don't, but it's a two thing. It's like there's one author doing one thing and Stephen King doing another, and it's in.
His son has been doing a pretty good comic so far, Lock and Key, which is one of my favorite like horror comics now.
And the Dark Tower books are also pretty good.
Yeah, I have to. I start to figure out where the hell it begins, though.
I've read the first one.
Okay.
It's good.
Also, besides H.P. Lovecraft.
I read the first one, I didn't like it so much.
You didn't like it?
But Will said that I have to read the next, two, and then it really hooks you in.
Yeah,
but I'm reading The Stand at the moment.
Yeah.
This is
also another thing that Atomic Robo.
I understand the comic, because they're doing it in comic also.
Oh, no, the book.
They're doing that in comic.
Another thing about Atomic Robo, appearance from Carl Sagan. the writer who wrote The Universe and Everything.
Yeah.
And he's an action hero in this.
Universe and Everything?
Like, he wrote a lot about the cosmos, Carl Sagan. Like, Carl Sagan?
When you said that, I thought you were saying Douglas Adams.
That'd be funny. But no, this is it's very... Just, if you want to read the, if you read this line dramatically, like... this is Carl Sagan with holding a lightning gun. Performed by Vess.
When you return to your unobservable but empirically determined dimension of origin, tell them Carl Sagan sent you.
Thank you.
I think the British accent really made
that. Exactly. That's why we need someone with an accent. That's why I asked.
Shakespearean actor over there.
Yeah. This is something we haven't done in a while. It's called Mestre's Conflict Theater. That was a little segment of it. It's been a while. And also, I've read a couple of other things. This is something interesting. Brian K. Vaughan, False Faces. I think I'm a big fan of his work on Why the Last Man. I'm going to try and get Matt, and you're going to have to probably buy the first volume because I already have the first volume back home, so I can't loan it to you.
Of what? Why the Last Man?
Yeah.
No, I've got the first.
Yeah, volume. Okay.
I tried to get hold of the second one. I couldn't find it anywhere.
Local comic book store.
Yeah, they have it there. All
right. But I saw it there. I was quite sure for a long time.
I found that this on sale at Gosh Comics, actually. It was I think it was £5. It was why not try?
Definitely.
And it was...
And what did you think?
I was sort of hoping for something better. I mean, it was sort of one of those comics where it's the theme kind of kept shoving it in your face. You ever have those kind of moments where it's yes, I get the fact that it's all about false faces he's getting too in deep into his identity.
Yeah. No,
but it's every moment it's he's being lost in himself, Dick.
Yeah.
And it's interesting ideas. They actually have Clayface facing off with Wonder Woman, which is something I've missed seeing Clayface in anything lately.
That's true.
He's a villain that I really kind of miss, but it was
Batman kind of has the best villains.
Yeah, he definitely has some cool
ones. Absolutely.
I mean, Spider-Man has...
Question.
Spider-Man is second, but Batman's got the best.
Yeah.
I know you disagree with that, don't you, Gibbon?
What do you think, Gibbon?
He says Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely
I see Spider-Man.
I mean, if... they're easily, number ones in their own... their own line, then. I mean, that's definitely easy to say. But,
I don't know. I think the X-Men villains are also incredibly well-realized.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're well-realized, but you can't remember, it's Sinestro.
They're too similar.
Okay, fine, but Magneto.
Magneto.
I think Spider-Man just has... villains are all very...
You know what, I take it
disparate.
Back.
Yeah, well, but I think so is... laid out and disparate.
I think Spider-Man might... give Batman a run for its money, because Batman's got the Joker, which is probably one of my favorite villains of all time. But at the same time, then you have, for Spider-Man, Green Goblin, you have Electro, you have Lizard.
You have people with actual powers that, compared to kind of guys with Tommy
Guns. They have powers and they have psychosis.
Yeah.
Most of Batman, it's just a psychosis. I feel like...
Poison Ivy is I think Poison Ivy is the only one with actual power. Clayface, yeah.
The alligator thing.
Venom. Venom has...
But I just think that Spider-Man's got a lot more good characters. Batman's got... I think Batman's quality of the few that, it has is good.
Yeah.
But that the main Spider-Man has a big...
And, they definitely use Clayface well in this. Because it was sort of like Wonder Woman, they have this whole thing, Wonder Woman was made from the clay of, God or something.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's sort of basically, Clayface finds this out somehow. He went to a local library, apparently. It's just sort of reading. It's sort of it's cool that you found this out, but why would you start reading up on Wonder Woman? It's just maybe you have clay that I want.
Yeah, maybe it's a
And so he takes the clay from her, basically, and so he gets a lot of power from her.
Right.
Which is interesting, but it was just, kind of goofy. But then you also have some really, you have some really interesting ones. I'm going to save Incognito from next week, I think, because I have a lot to talk about this. But Sinister Spider-Man, really fun. You have basically... it's sinister because it's actually from the point of view of Matt Gargan as Venom. Because basically, during the Dark Reign, I'm not sure if you know this, basically Norman put all the supervillains in different roles on the Avengers, and they became Dark Avengers. Hmm. Did you know this?
I don't think
Bullseye is Hawkeye.
Oh, right.
They're dressing up Bullseye as Hawkeye.
Right.
Like, all these like, funny things, and they have Venom, basically.
I'm kind of fine with that, because I kind of like Clint as Ronin better anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like all these funny kind of, like they have all the, wow, they like, what a middle finger to all the villains, like,
yeah,
to all the superheroes,
yeah,
and all the villains are basically going around as them.
Yeah.
And so, but then you have, like, so basically this whole story about Venom, basically, like, getting the pick of, like, getting whatever he wants now, and, like, being basically number one. Like, everyone loves Venom when he's a Spider-Man.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
It's, like, this very funny thing. Like, he's going around, like, it's all about him just, like, basically nailing babes, and, like, it's like he's making out with babes after stopping crimes. It's funny. Like, he just picks up a random girl and is swinging around. He's, like, eating prostitutes for fun. it's great. There's a scene where he throws a prostitute into JJ's bed. It's just to fuck with him, because, you know, JJ was the one who made him, like, turned him into the Scorpion.
Yeah.
So there's, like, instead of eating JJ, he throws, this is JJ when he's, like, he's currently mayor in the Spider-Man universe.
Oh, right.
So it's just, like, what a way to fuck with someone.
For a second, I will quite miss the actor they have playing as J. Jonah Jameson right now.
They did have a great kick for that. That was,
I think they totally rebranded it, so it would be
weird if you didn't see another actor all of a sudden.
He was very, very good.
He's brilliant.
But yeah, you have, like, it's kind of weird, though, because I love the artist that they use for this. It's Chris Bacalo. But then they change it, like, after three comics, they change it to, like, this other guy. Like, I think it's Dissolver or something. Not the same at all, like, compared to this.
Yeah.
And it's this humongous change. And then all of a sudden they change back right at the end, like, right for the last issue.
Mm.
Sort of like this. Okay, you were just like this, like, you know, it's like, it's not like they kept it the same, which is weird.
But that's sort of, like, what Venom is sort of like. He's very sort of, I guess, changing.
Yeah.
So I guess it's an interesting art perspective to how to do that, because it's the same writing, correct?
Yeah.
But it's very different art. So I think that's sort of done on purpose. It's sort of like, well, mentioned ahead a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I remember the artist for Batman Earth 1 is Gary Frank.
Gary Frank. I haven't ever heard of him before. It's definitely a... Oh, yeah, and there's also really... This is a really funny comic as well, because they have a great Watchmen reference.
Oh.
Because one of the villains is called the Everywhere Man.
Right.
I mean, Dr. Everything.
Okay.
And wait. I gotta find this.
So what, a reference to Dr. Manhattan?
Dr. Manhattan, basically.
Oh, okay.
And it's just, it's great. Like, at the end, he goes around with a censored bar.
Oh,
he has a censored bar, like...
that earlier.
Yeah, it was the... What a great way to have it. And he's, like, he's just sort of the only reason he's, like, everyone's missing an arm in this, like, the villains, because they're all just bitten off by Venom. that's sort of like they're all like amputees.
Nice.
Like, and they all get like little like bionic arms. Like, everyone like he actually had an arm, but he decided just to get rid of his arms because just to feel some sympathy towards everyone else. Some great lines like that. Wait, gotta find it. Comic books can be cool, yeah.
Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta find some
Red Watchmen.
Watchmen.
Just read Watchmen.
No, see, no. Don't read something else first before Watchmen.
Why?
After reading Watchmen, everything else just like it's which is a
problem.
That's
not true. That's not true. I read Watchmen, but then I had Sandman and Preacher, which all both.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Like,
very true.
So it's not quite like that.
But
you
basically, like, my problem was that like this was like I took a comics class for fun because I wanted to talk about comics in class.
Yeah.
And like the first thing that he had us read was basically Watchmen.
Yeah.
And everyone else, like afterwards, like the first comic we read was like Ex Machina, which is one of my favorite comics.
Yeah.
And everyone could not stop talking about it. It's like, oh, but it's not Watchmen. This is like, of course it's not fucking but everyone could only talk about how it wasn't Watchmen.
I didn't like the choices in that class for the most part.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you were in my club. You were in... Yes. Didn't that piss you off how no... Like, it was just... All the time, it was just, this isn't Watchmen.
I mean, I quite liked Watchmen. I've read Watchmen before that, but I quite liked Watchmen. But,
yeah, but I mean, I like Watchmen too, but it was just sort of like a frustrating thing when, like, the only thing
liked,
that can be said is that
I
it wasn't Watchmen.
Machina, but after that, I didn't really like the comics that we read.
What else did you choose? What else Watchmen?
What else did we read? We read one about, which is basically a autobiography of.
Of a jazz player?
No, I was talking about the lesbian.
Oh, yeah, it was Alison Bechdel, a tragic comedy.
didn't really love it.
I liked that, actually. I kind of liked the writing. I always, like, suggest it to my lesbian friends.
I think we should have done Sandman and that. What else?
Sandman would have been cool.
I don't know how you could have a comic cast without doing Sandman.
We also did this really kind of funny, cute comic about, like, some Londoners in the 1920s, which was...
But that was more like a children's book, almost.
Oh, okay.
But then there was also one...
And also, how can you... Also, tell me you must have done at least Tintin or Asterix novelettes.
Oh, hold on. You guys
what was mouse? This comic class then?
Do you guys did Mouse.
Yeah, okay, wait. Here is Dr. Everything for the...
I did Mouse in my Holocaust class in the same semester, but not...
If you want to see Dr. Everything...
Man.
With the censored bar.
And I think the introduction to him is great, too, because...
That's good.
It's, like, just read the comics. It's, like, two of them to put clothes on. It's like the first big panel with him in it.
I can't find it, sorry. Dude, your junk is a distraction.
just read the next lines.
Besides, if you can see and do everything, why didn't you stop Spider-Man from chomping your arm off?
When you have attained omnipotence, you realise clothing is but a distraction.
Nice. And that is just a great, like, you know,
yeah,
the comic
very,
is just
very,
like,
very good Watchmen.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It, you didn't expect it too, which was even better. It's just like, all of a sudden, there's one of the villains, this big red naked guy. It's just like, bravo, Brian Reed, for, like, just being fun, making fun.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that's what I read. We also, something that else I found recently, after the last podcast, was Axe Cop, which is now one of my new favorite webcomics that I showed, you know, you and, did I tell you about that, Aaron?
What's about what?
Axe Cop?
No.
What this is a comic written by a 5-year-old, but it's illustrated by his 29-year-old brother, who's actually, like, an artist. So you have the child's insanity going at,
like, verbal flow. Just imagine a child,
really?
A 5-year-old child telling you a story. And then this happened, and then this happened. But totally insane.
It is, but with great art, actually. It's great. Like, there's a character called Unibaby in that, who's a unicorn baby. and then there's also a... Like, later on, they, like, basically Axe Cop, who's a cop who finds the perfect fireman's axe. At a fire, he decides to become an actual a cop with an axe, and that's the basic plot. And then, like, he gets a partner called Flute Cop,
who has a flute.
Yeah,
who then becomes a,
of course,
who becomes he gets dinosaur blood on them after they hunt dinosaurs. He becomes dinosaur soldier. Because, like, 5-year-old, like, you get blood on you, you turn into that. Like, and it's, like, this hilarious just kind of comic. It's, been, like, there's been, like, 6 issues of it so far. Like, kind of long, kind of cute, like, it's just hilarious. You enjoy, like, every moment. Like, they go buy avocados one day, and they eat their avocados, and they get avocado hands where they can shoot avocados out.
Nice. You say that was a web comic.
It's a web comic, so it is just great. It's one of my new... what did you think of it, Vast, the first two issues?
It was very, very good. Well, it's literally like a hyperactive 5-year-old telling you the story.
Which is why it's just the art is like, it's sort of like, it wouldn't be,
no,
like, it wouldn't be good if it wasn't for the art that helped out. Like,
definitely.
The artist is very talented.
Yeah, the artist is great. And, like, I thought it was great. Like, why not just ask your, like, you know, your, like, brother, and, like, your little, like, brother, but, like, tell me a story. And this is kind of, like, I wish, like, that happened to me when I was a kid. Like, I wish I had an older brother who was, like, somehow 25 years older than me. And just asked me to start, like, telling him a story about something. Because that's sort of, like, the imagination you have when you're a kid that you totally
lose
afterwards.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so it definitely kind of makes you feel bad. Because, like, I wish I was this imaginative now.
Definitely.
And I think that's all for this week. I mean, does anyone else have anything else comic-wise that they read? Gibbo, I know you read comics now. I mean, have you read a...
I've not read much recently. Last week, I was getting through Sandman, and I still need to borrow his Preachers.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I guess...
Nothing recent.
Comics cost a lot here. That's sort of what I've, you know, I mean, there's a lot of deals, though, which is nice. I mean, I went to Gosh Comics and Forbidden Planets, and they both have racks of, like, half off or everything,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
which is...
But that's
that's recent. That's this year because because of the economic downturn. Like it's not that was.
That's after the economic downturn. Then I guess.
Yeah.
Upside to that.
But yeah, that's like I was able to get. What was I able to get for really cheap? Actually, I was able to get Young Liars for really cheap, as well as Sea Guy. Young Liars I only got for like £3 actually.
Hmm.
And this is from David Lapham. I'm looking forward to reading this.
I've never heard of that.
This is a... he's a very crime noir kind of writer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's all about clubs and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's basically a bunch of, like, kind of ravers who, like... he meets this one girl who's totally crazy or something. It's all about that. A lot of crime. A lot of young people getting shot.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
No, the only other thing we were going to talk about was, Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. As I said, like, I've been told that it gets better, but I only read the first trade.
I remember I bought the first trade, and it was very slow.
None of the characters felt at all, like,
realistic, like 355.
Not even realistic, just you didn't feel any sympathy for any of the characters. Like, they weren't deep, meaningful characters at all. They felt utterly two-dimensional. So I didn't get on with that. I really, really hated the American patriotism of it, but I don't know, maybe that's just me. But it's so incredibly blatant.
It's been a while since I read a lot of it.
But kind of jingoistic American pride.
Before you say that, though, wasn't the girlfriend in Australia... isn't the girlfriend in Australia coming after?
Yeah.
All right, so maybe that changes.
Maybe.
It is a big road trip. I mean, it is.
And I also felt, the way the society was presented dealing with what
without
happened
women
isn't realistic.
I mean, without men
wasn't that realistic. I didn't think that's how it would go down.
Although,
if that happened, I don't think that's how it would go down.
Although, admittedly, the most war-driven society, the Mongols, during the 12th century or so, were mostly driven by women. Go figure.
Really?
Yeah,
yes, that was a mostly woman-driven society. Women were allowed to go to war.
I mean, there are no women in the room right now, so we can easily just sort of say like, things without really caring that much. Yeah. But I mean, women can be really vindictive like to each other. I mean, let's not like just sort of like...
it's just... it's not even that. It's just the way they're presented with dealing with the world. Like...
well, let's ask Joe and Gibbo what they think of. Like, you know, it's like... in the first volume, like, basically, all the men are gone, and some things that happen, basically...
We don't know. Everything with a male, like, chromosome dies.
Okay, exactly.
It's randomly. Basically, they start coughing up blood, like, you know, just...
and,
right, they keel over randomly. Like.
And there's only two males left in the world, a guy and his pet monkey.
Yeah.
That's it. Boy.
Yeah.
The things that happen are basically
all the wives of like the men, like the husbands in Senate, they all like want to basically like all the Republican wives, they want to take over like the seats. They want to get those seats because they like
they feel that because their husbands were there, they have the right to be.
And most of the planes are like, you know, most of the pilots are men, like, so like all like there's no like plane travel anymore.
So
you have to go by train now. So, like, do you think, like, I mean, it's probably not your... it's not probably not the thing you had against it, but, I mean, is that realistic of... what do you think, you know?
It's not even... For example...
Well, first off, I hate women.
No, I'm just kidding.
got that out of the air.
On my chest right now, but no, seriously, I enjoyed certain elements. I did not notice the jingoism in it. Maybe that's just me.
It could be just sort of...
I'm viewing it from a very different standpoint than you are.
I think half the world's population dies. Functioning society would not be very realistic.
I know, and it's not. Like, it isn't really a functioning society.
Is it
society.
Set in the present?
Present day. There isn't really a functioning society. That's kind of what I'm saying. But the way that... okay, personally, I think if something at that level of disaster happened, people would band together rather than... society descending into anarchy.
But
like,
you are an optimist. That's an optimistic point of view.
It's kind of interesting because we do have DMZ, which you have read, and that's sort of, that is something like, you know, hit by a tragedy. I mean, there are
DMZ is much more realistic from the way I see it.
But that's an optimistic point of view because that is people banding together. That is not what might.
But I just
happen.
Don't think. I don't think. I don't think people. Okay, fine. Yeah,
I think if the future of the human race, you know, becomes obsolete. Then
okay,
I doubt.
Have you seen Children of Men?
Yes.
Yeah.
The way... No, I've not seen Hulk. I've only seen half of it. Because your DVD
broke. Your DVD sucked. We were
but
waiting 2 hours to watch.
All I'm saying is, in that the government in power, like, becomes utterly authoritarian because that's a way a society deals with the breakdown. Like, there's consolidation of power, it becomes totalitarian, people...
But that's actually,
I think
it's a complete, there's a massive difference between.
I think 5 years on in the Children of Men world, it would have descended into
anarchy.
Because
but this isn't 5 years on. This happened straight away.
There's an already existing power structure within Children of Men, whereas the power structure within this comic
has got.
Okay, no, I understand. Okay, well, okay, right,
yeah.
Right. Anyway,
but hold on.
My let me just.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We have a theory major here.
It's just okay. Yeah. You know the Amazons in it?
Yeah.
You know how they...
There's a group of women called the Amazons who basically cut off the right breast and they basically hate, like, any men. Like, they're
they
actually
get
hunting...
Rid of all, like,
they decide to hunt
all
them,
symbols
like, the remaining
of, like, men out, eradicate it out of existence. The way that happens is realistic in the sense that they form a society out of nothing. From the collapse of society, they form their own... like, power structure. I think that's how it would have gone down, that other groups would have banded together to follow whatever ideology or ideas that they have. That's not how it's presented.
Was the second volume, the prison town, or...
I only read the first volume.
I thought you said... Okay.
Me and Boz are the same page, we are the same issue. And I don't know if I agree with that interpretation, because I think that... with an existing power structure is the end of religion, end of organized religion, end of ideology, and the fact that even though half the world's population, all the men died, there would still be that sort of setup, especially in American culture, where you have women infiltrating every sector. We have women governors, we have women senators, we have women police officers.
Yeah, I understand that, definitely. But...
so I don't know if it'd be a complete collapse. I think there would still be at least a semblance for a while.
I mean, you definitely have kind of like.
I want to read more just to see where
it definitely is something like once you kind of go through a couple of volumes, really want to find out what the hell is happening.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely.
And that's why it's definitely you got to give it a chance. It's definitely one of those things. I mean, Brian K. Vaughan, like, he does a lot of good work. I mean, sure, he kind of was very heavy-handed in, like, the new Batman, like, in this Batman issue.
Yeah, you were saying.
You guys can even borrow it if you want to try it out. You know, see what you think. But it gets better. It's why Last Man is one of my favorite series.
Okay. Good. Well, I'll give it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's time to investigate that.
Yeah. Actually, I have all of them downloaded as well. So. But yeah, that's. I think that's all for the week. And thank you guys. I thank you and everyone for joining in. Like, you know.
No problem.
Yeah. Sorry, Joey. I know you look kind of bored.
No, I'm learning a lot.
Yeah,
he did participate.
Joe just won poker. He's fine.
Yeah, there was a poker game going on. And then we just was like, okay, great. You know, Vass and Matt, you guys can join me for this. Good.
And then I was out.
Yeah.
Quick after.
But you didn't have anything to talk about, Aaron. You know.
Yeah. Well, if we were only talking about trades, I really wouldn't.
Yeah.
But
it's sort of, we could talk about it. I don't mind going on tangents.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. But that's all for this week. We'll be back maybe next week, but not sure about it. Same bat channel, same bat podcast. London, my town. You are what's bringing me down. The starlight don't shine to your ground. From the start, we can't dance like we did, surrounded by these shortage kids, so caught up in cool they don't live their lies from the heart. And I've given up on truth, 'cause I'm running out. So high, get me low. It's something I'll leave.
This is Alex Erdy back again, reporting live on the scene of the 45 signing, and have here Tony Lee, writer for. That's correct, right? You looked at me weird for a second there.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
Do you want to start again?
Sure, yeah, okay. Here live with Tony Lee, writer for Dr. Who Comics. And there's lots more, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But what you're working on currently is Dr. Who, the comic series, not the television show.
You're doing well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not here. I'm just here as a fan.
Yeah. What do you think of the
segment
so far today?
It's amazing. I like the early in the last year, where they basically just allow people to wander around.
It's great. It's nice. It's like a party.
Yeah, exactly. There's some crisps out. There's some chatting. You see gossip. There's a guy with a wire pyramid on his head.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That was a great story you had there.
No, I was very curious about the guy.
There was this fellow that you spotted, I think, initially.
Apparently, he's very well known in England. He's very well known in London. As a champion, he's got a golden pyramid on his head.
Yes.
He has a magic amulet. He channels nuclear radiation into his body to realize DNA.
So this is a real person walking around the comics. This is not a creation from one of your comics.
He's been around for years. I wandered over and had a chat with him. I was putting a pyramid on my head. It was rather nice.
Yes. Do you feel any different once you have the pyramid on your head?
Yeah. I'm not, but I think you need to work a long time to realign your
Points out that might have been broke.
It was broken, and you had glued it back together. I was rather worried that it might have therefore stopped the pyramid waves that goes through, and it means that the demons are bad, this might have been really bad. But imagine having it should have stopped that.
So, going on to Doctor Who now, we have coming in, are you planning on writing with the Doctor, or are you going to kind of play around with Tennant for a little space?
At the moment, I'm working with Matt Smith. He's Twitter. We're going to be doing a 10th Doctor finale and Matthew Dalsmith, who did the Fugitive Art, is coming back on board to do it. And I believe that we might be doing something with the 11th Doctor. There's going to be a big announcement in about 2 to 3 weeks at Gallifrey 1.
So you can't say anything, so that's understandable.
Oh, I can. I just can't say what's exactly going to happen.
Yeah,
but
so
we all know what's going to happen.
Look forward to that then. Side chain,
if it actually happens. Obviously, at the end of the day, anything change, BBC, obviously, other license holders, they might decide they want to.
Have they been happy with
They've allowed us to quit,
yeah.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky, we've got one of the best schools who's been involved in the scene in the UK. He's been some doctors who have never just done the torture. And the guy knows everything about it. Actually, have him there. He will tell me and say, actually, that should be this, and they wouldn't do this because of this. And all of that. We have had emails just saying, no. Most of the time, he's actually. Films. But it's something.
Different villains and villains or kind of antagonists.
Because obviously there's one unknown to who. And you've got the other side that goes.
We don't have one of those sort of like the first page of the comic versus previously Doctor Who season 2.
but no. So with the X-Wonder, we tried not to get that guitar and put a tag in it. I'm not sure enough. We're trying to get it down, man. It's a new nemesis. No one quite knows what.
Same thing, you know, it's like dialogue and writing. Are you gonna? Will you be including any Weeping Angel stories?
No.
France. 28th of February. Will there be a live webcast? Definitely follow your blog and the Twitter, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. We have to do kind of in between. That's good though, because I mean, it was a very kind of time. I mean, you don't know what he could have done. Thank you so much for talking to me. Yeah. An honor to talk to you finally. And I guess it was great that we all talked about the pyramid. You didn't think you would see someone like that in a comic store. Maybe in a homeopathic. Fair enough, yeah. Us geeks are kind of a weird bunch sometimes.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.